Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, the Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the websites sheetmusicplus.com and sporkle.com. Question number one. Musical instruments have slang names, especially among musicians. For example, guitars are known as belly fiddles. Drums are known as skins. Accordions are known as groan box. Oboes are known as thermometers. So, which instrument is known as the foghorn? Is that A, trombone, B, saxophone, C, tuba, or D, double bass? Foghorn. Which instrument? And question number two, a drum kit is a set of drums, cymbals, and other percussion instruments used with drumsticks in jazz and popular music. The most basic components are a foot-operated bass drum, a snare drum, a suspended cymbal, and one or more tom-toms. So how many pieces are in the world's largest drum kit? Is that A, 77? B, 105, C, 410, or D, 813. The answers to these two important musical trivia questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from the website onthisday.com, and today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of March the 15th. Well, it was on this day, back in 1947, that Margaret Truman, daughter of President Harry Truman, made her professional radio debut. She sang with the Detroit Symphony. And it was 63 years ago today, 1956, that Carl Perkins appeared on ABC TV's Ozark Jubilee and performed Blue Suede Shoes. It was his first television appearance. Elvis Presley performed the song the same night on CBS TV's Stage Show. 1956 today.
Out of bed and I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping, out on the streets the traffic starts jumping, with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5.
Dolly Parton's 9 to 5 introduces our country music news entitled Don't Stop the Music. Songs Tell Candidate's Story. This was published on the 10th of March, 2019, News and Observer. Elena Shore, Associated Press. When Elizabeth Warren took the stage to launch her presidential run to the strains of Dolly Parton's 9 to 5, the song seemed to sum up the spirit of a candidacy based on giving workers a fairer shake. Only days earlier, fellow Democrat Kamala Harris had exited her own campaign kickoff rally with an equally fitting musical choice of My Shot, an anthem of ambition for political change from the hit musical Hamilton. The song's chorus, delivered by a young Alexander Hamilton, underscored Harris's confident emergence as a top-tier White House contender. I'm just like my country. I'm young, scrappy, and hungry, and I'm not throwing away my shot. Presidential candidates have used the Mannix songs to great effect in recent decades. Bill Clinton's upstart victory remains linked in the popular imagination with Fleetwood Mac's Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow. Barack Obama showed off his musical fluency by picking multiple go-to songs in genres from hip-hop to rock to Motown. But using campaign songs to help connect with voters can cause trouble for presidential hopefuls if musicians object to the use of their works, as Warren could be finding out. We did not approve the request, and we do not approve requests like this of a political nature, Parton's manager, Danny Nozell, told the Associated Press by email when asked about the Massachusetts senator's use of 9 to 5. If Parton escalates the matter, there is no shortage of precedent. The late Tom Petty reportedly sent a cease and desist letter to Representative Michelle Bachmann, Republican, Minnesota, over the use of his song, American Girl, in her 2011 campaign. And former President George W. Bush got a similar letter from Petty over his choice of the singer's I Won't Back Down during the 2000 campaign. President Donald Trump has faced his own rejection from popular artists after taking office, most recently from Rihanna. She tweeted in November that not for much longer would her music be permitted to play at Trump rallies, and soon after her representatives reportedly sent their own cease and desist request. Guidelines for the use of campaign songs from the American Society of Composers, Authors, and Publishers state that, quote-unquote, it may be easier for campaigns to be licensed through performing rights organizations to ensure that the use of songs at multiple large venues fully adheres to copyright statutes. The Recording Industry Association of America, however, notes in its own guidance that licensing to use a specific song can be obtained by either the campaign or the venue. When campaign songs catch on, the relationship between candidates and their favorite tunes can prove fruitful. It's still early in the 2020 Democrat campaign, giving candidates plenty of time to develop their campaign playlist. But the early choices by Warren and Harris indicate that this year's hopefuls are aware of the keen importance of music in building the candidate's public persona. The article skips down and ends with this. No matter how a campaign obtains its license, the use of a song is unlikely to prove problematic unless the artist behind the work raises an objection. And in classical music news, we have this article written by Daniel McHugh, published in Quarter Notes, WCPE's member magazine, Spring 2019 issue, entitled A Celebration of Women and Music. From the Star-Spangled Banner to the Stars and Stripes Forever, music helps Americans to celebrate their heroes, holidays, and history. This spring, the Women's Voices Chorus will perform a special concert to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment and the right for women to vote. This concert will continue the American tradition of patriotic music as we commemorate women's suffrage. The Women's Voices Chorus, led by music director Dr. Alan Friedman, will perform a concert entitled Still I Rise, Songs of Our Foremothers, on May the 5th, 2019, joined by the Capital City Girls Choir, CCGC, they will perform music of the women's suffrage movement from the early 20th century, as well as arrangements by female composers. Dr. Friedman selected the music, about half of which is written by women. This concert features the premiere of a newly commissioned work written specifically for the two groups. Michael Busowitz Quarm composed Mother's Daughters for this concert, a piece Dr. Friedman describes as a dialectic between two generations of women. It is about the power of women and how they can understand the strife of the past Another piece on the program, Rising Like Tides by Rosemary Jeffords, will be in the North American premiere. The WCPE Education Fund awarded a grant to the Women's Voices Chorus, and it will be used for this concert and for the commissioning of the new piece, Mothers, Daughters. This concert is an educational opportunity not only for the audience, but also for the young girls who sing in the CCGC. You can continue to support the Education Fund by donating to the Classical Station and allocating 10% of your gift to music education. For more information on the Women's Voices Chorus and updates on the concert, please visit Women's Voices Chorus, one word, .org. Gary Clark Jr. singing Shotgun Man introduces our jazz and blues music news. It's an article simply titled Music, Gary Clark Jr., This Land, Blues. The soulful blues rocker ups the ante in nearly every way on this towering third album. Lyrically ambitious, politically urgent, and stylistically diverse, Land marks an expansion of Clark's artistic horizons. It starts strong with funk and hip-hop tinge grooves before dipping into vintage blues, both acoustic and electric on The Governor and Dirty Dishes Blues. Throughout, you have Clark's husky pipes and unparalleled guitar work. It's available now. This came out in People magazine on the 11th of March 2019 issue. And in music research and technology, we have this article simply titled Olivia Newton-John, The Truth About My Health. This is published in People magazine on the 18th of March, 2019, by Janine Rubenstein. The singer and Grease star reveals the recent health scare that fueled death rumors and how she's really handling stage 4 breast cancer. Olivia Newton-John just learned how to Skype. Seated in her home office wearing a comfy-looking shawl and large reading glasses on February 21, she peers questioningly into the computer screen for her People video interview, only to erupt with Sandy-like joy. "It's working! There you are," she says as she settles in with the new technology. The next step is a bit trickier, opening up about her life now. It's the first time Newton-John has fully addressed the state of her health after multiple tabloid reports in January all but had her at death's door, claiming that the beloved Grease star and physical singer, 70, had nearly or fully succumbed to the stage 4 breast cancer that is an ongoing fact of her life. "Those things are so stupid. Why not just go, 'Here I am, and I'm fine,'" she says of immediately taking to social media with smiley video denial. "We just nipped it in the bud." She's certainly not saying her farewells, but Newton-John admits that the last few months have been challenging. Nearly 2 years after learning her breast cancer had returned for a third time since 1992. Newton-John reveals that she spent the last 6 months recovering from a fractured pelvis, a side effect of the weakening of her bones due to cancer. The star goes into detail about the latest ordeal and a lifetime full of other ups and downs. In the American version of her new memoir, Don't Stop Believin'. The title, she says, fits perfectly. I always felt empowered when I sang it, says Newton John of her 1976 song. The song's message particularly resonates, she says, quote unquote, "You'll get by and bad days will hurry by. What could be more perfect?" The Australian native had this strong brand of optimism long before she and John Travolta danced and sang themselves into household names back in 1978. "Everyone has difficulty in their life," she says. "I try to live in the moment and enjoy right now, which is all we have." The article skips down. Coming to grips with this latest aggressive form of the disease, which doctors say is incurable but can be managed through treatment, has been a process. "Of course, I've had my moments and my tears and all of that," she says. Medicinal cannabis has helped incredibly with pain maintenance and sleep. The singer's also taken an oral form of traditional medicine prescribed by her oncologist, but admits she can be guilty of sugarcoating the facts of life. "I probably downplay things a lot," she says. "I don't like to worry people. But the death rumors hurt. Ask her now, and she says, I'm feeling good. Just getting stronger." Dido singing Thank You introduces our rock and pop music news. It's an article published in People magazine on the 18th of March 2019 by Mia McNeese entitled Dido Talks, New Music and Motherhood. British singer-songwriter Dido, 47, fondly remembers coming to the U.S. in 1999 for her debut album, No Angel. "I couldn't believe I was in America, traveling around and getting to play my songs," she says. "It was a proper thrill." Soon after her stateside arrival, Dido saw her popularity skyrocket when rapper Eminem sampled her ballad, Thank You, for his hit song, Stan. She has since sold more than 40 million albums worldwide and is now releasing her fifth studio album, Still On My Mind, in May. She'll kick off her first world tour in 15 years. "I'm a mixture of excitement and apprehension because I haven't done it in so long," she says of touring. "But the excitement is winning at the moment." The singer, who has a 7-year-old son, Stanley, is excited to hit the road with her family. "There were definitely times back in the day where I would be doing these extraordinary shows in old Roman amphitheaters on a beautiful summer's evening in the south of France. But there was no one there to see it with me," she says. "Doing it this time around and sharing that with them makes it a really emotional thing." Duke Ellington's Prelude to a Kiss introduces our local music news, entitled Joe Winters Broke Down Racial Barriers in the Raleigh Police Force and the Entertainment World. This is written by Lisha Jennings, published in IndieWeek.com on February the 20th, 2019. The poster promised, quote-unquote, the biggest show of 51. Duke Ellington, Nat King Cole, and Sarah Vaughan were the headliners. This is but one of many ways that Joe Winters, the man who made the concert happen, was ahead of his time. But the light-hearted poster conceals the harsh realities of the times. Quote-unquote colored patrons were directed to purchase their tickets for the Raleigh Memorial Auditorium concert from Hamlin Drugstore, an African-American-owned pharmacy in downtown Raleigh, whereas their white counterparts were directed to Cameron Village. Knowing America's history of segregation, one would imagine that seating in the venue would also be separated based on race. But this was not the case. Instead, one man's love of music bridged two communities at a time when mixing races in a celebratory capacity was far from the norm. Winters was Raleigh's second African-American police officer. He was also a husband, father, entrepreneur, and marketing guru. By today's standards, he would be called an influencer. While serving on the Raleigh police force with distinction, he also maintained a successful career as a concert promoter. His story immediately captures the imaginations of people, says Billy Warden, who assembled the exhibit, Joe Winters Comes Home at Raleigh Memorial Auditorium. His story allows us to see American history in a different way. The exhibit runs through March. A police officer by day and concert promoter by night, Winters navigated the Jim Crow era with aplomb, introducing the triangle to some of the era's greatest African-American performers, and in the process, bringing rare racial harmony to a segregated space. After his passing in 2005, Winters left behind an archive of concert posters, ticket stubs, photographs, and more, which is the basis of this exhibit. Winters' emphasis on respect and equality helps us understand the cultural significance of his concert bookings. Talking to people who remember attending Winters' concerts at Raleigh Memorial Auditorium, Warden found that, for white concertgoers, attending racially mixed shows humanized people of color, whom they more often encountered in service positions. In researching the exhibit, Warden heard multiple stories of patrons ignoring the segregated seating rules of the auditorium and simply enjoying one another's company on the dance floor. I remember when people didn't care once the music came on. The music was able to transcend racial boundaries. There would be times when there would be interracial dancing. Winters also brought Jackie Wilson, Ray Charles, and Diana Ross, among many others here. Winters was aware of, pleased by, the changing times, with younger people becoming more open and willing to come together. His role as a police officer added an extra level of trust and respect from the community, as well as from Raleigh's official leaders. So how'd you do on today's musical trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question: musical instruments have slang names, especially among musicians. For example, guitars are known as belly fiddles. Drums are known as skins. Accordions are known as a groan box. Oboes are known as thermometers. So which instrument is known as the foghorn? Is that A, trombone, B, saxophone, C, tuba, or D, double bass? Correct answer is foghorn is the slang term for the tuba. Answer C. Besides those slang terms already mentioned here, Sporkle.com also provides these slang terms for musical instruments: a suitcase or tubs or hides for the drums, a bone pile for the xylophone, axe for the electric guitar, licorice stick, fountain pen, gob stick for the clarinet, and the storehouse, 88s, ivories, mahogany, the box for the piano. As noted in Medium.com, in 2013, Norwegian musician Christopher Lowe played the tuba in a lighthouse to produce a drone sound synced to the cadence of the circling light, not to guide lost ships and souls towards safety, but instead to explore the metaphysical coast just beyond our comprehension. His story ends with this comment. In an age of quick fixes and the search for ever more frenzied sensations, maybe the slow burn of drone music, like a tuba or a foghorn, reminds us that life is exalted and incomprehensible, a searching light in the dark. And the answer to our second question, a drum kit is a set of drums, cymbals, and other percussion instruments used with drumsticks in jazz and popular music. The most basic components are a foot-operated bass drum, a snare drum, a suspended cymbal, and one or more tom-toms. So how many pieces are in the world's largest drum kit? Is that A, 77, B, 105, C, 410, or D, 813? Correct answer? Answer D, 813 pieces. The world's largest drum kit took 36 years to build. It was built by Dr. Mark Temperato, who is working to expand to over 1,000 pieces. The website, sheetmusicplus.com, also notes these little-known facts about drumming. The modern drum kit was made popular in the 1920s in New Orleans in the vaudeville era. Drumming burns more calories in a half hour than cycling, hiking, and weightlifting in the same amount of time. Drums played an important role in medieval and Renaissance Europe. The snare drum and its relatives were used in the infantry to send coded instructions to soldiers. They were also used in ancient Africa and India to send messages over long distances between villages. In the 1980s, electric drums became very popular, and many people thought that they would make traditional drum kits obsolete or extinct. However, most drummers still prefer acoustic kits. So, let's close out today's program with a classic piece of drumming by Gene Krupa in Benny Goodman and his orchestra's 1937 recording of Sing, Sing, Sing. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. And as we leave you, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. I'm Randy Thompson reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. Content of this program intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Music Review readily available as a podcast after the broadcast in the TRRS website, TriangleReadingService.org. Now, if you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me, Randy Thompson, at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.